Warning, this podcast is intended for adult audiences only. We discuss sex and sexual relationships in a frank and open manner. We are not marriage and family therapist or sex therapist, and the content provided is for informational and entertainment purposes only. If you are under the age of 18 or do not wish to hear explicit discussions about sex and sexual relationships or adult language, then you shouldn't listen any further. But if you are, well, grab your seat, grab a drink, sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode of The Accidental Swingers. We're Marina and Tristan, a longtime married professional couple in our early 50s. Kids, dogs, cats, vacations at Disney World, you know, the whole nine yards. But in 2018, we decided, after years of kind of talking about it, to live a non-monogamous lifestyle.
But it wasn't that easy, was it?
No, it wasn't.
You see, we sort of accidentally started swinging.
Yeah, we did. And we found our story so humorous and fun that we decided to record and chronicle our journey for ourselves so that we could go back and listen to our adventures.
And boy, have we had some adventures.
Yeah, we have.
In the last few years, we've found that we really love this lifestyle that we've chosen. And it's not only strengthened our marriage, but it's also helped us to grow both as individuals and as a couple.
And as we began to go back and listen to our recordings, we realized that others may really benefit from listening to and hearing about our mistakes and our very candid discussions about what we were going through and experiencing.
We talk about and we laugh about.
We laugh a lot.
Yeah, we do. We laugh about the mistakes that we've made, the crazy things that we've experienced, and the exciting things that have happened to us.
But we also talk very openly and honestly about the tough times, the emotional landmines and pitfalls we had to navigate, some rougher than others.
So we thought that we'd create this podcast so that others may gain some perspective or some insight and maybe even learn a lesson or two about what to do and what not to do in their own journeys.
And basically, you'll join us on our journey in real time because we will include excerpts of our recordings. Some will be quick outtakes, others will be longer conversations about what we were going through or experiencing at that time.
So grab a drink.
Or settle into your seat if you're driving.
Relax, sit back, and join us as we bumble our way through this adventure that we call
The Lifestyle.
Well, hello. Welcome. Welcome to the Accidental Swingers podcast. I'm Marina and I'm solo today. Excited to introduce you to my new friend and actually functional medicine doctor, Dr. Tanisha Wards. And we're going to be talking today about some of the issues and problems that I've been facing and struggling with. And I'm going to tell you a little bit of a story about how I met Dr. Wards and how we started this process. But I'm so thrilled that she's here with us today. And I wanted to bring her on and she agreed to come on. She and her husband are not only familiar with lifestyle patients, but she and her husband are in the lifestyle. And so it's been an amazing opportunity to have someone that understands the issues that I on my journey are going through from the same shoes, so to speak. So I'm so thrilled that you're here, Dr. Wards. But before we actually meet you, I wanted to give a little bit of a quick backstory about my issues and how we met actually, and why we're doing this. So my quick backstory, if you guys are finding this podcast or this YouTube video, not because of the Accidental Swingers podcast, but because of the title or the subject matter, I wanted to take a couple minutes to actually introduce myself and tell you my backstory. So my name is Marina, and together with my husband, Tristan, we co-host the Accidental Swingers podcast. That podcast, we've been a couple for about 34 years. And about 6 years ago, we decided to move from our monogamous marriage into an open relationship. So basically, we became swingers. The story is really funny. It was accidental, which is why we call ourselves the Accidental Swingers. And we talk about it on our podcast. So you can go and listen to it there if you want to hear about that story. But what we didn't know at the time when we started swinging and we started to open up our relationship, what we didn't realize was that the decision to do that was going to affect us so much more. It was so much more about our relationship than it was just about having sex with other people's spouses, so to speak. And so the journey itself has really strengthened our relationship, but it's also allowed my husband and myself to rediscover ourselves and our sexuality and our sensuality at this ripe old age in our middle age. I think I talk about it. We started in lifestyle. I was in my late 40s, early 50s. And so that was 6 years ago. And 6 years ago, when you're in your late 40s, early 50s, your body changes a lot in 6 years at this time frame. So I kind of wrote down a little bit of my backstory so that I could be very clear and succinct with it. So I'm going to actually read what I wrote down to explain where I am so that you guys can kind of understand what I'm going through and where I am in my life and my physical and mental health. So that was my backstory. And we've been in the lifestyle for about 6 years. And the podcast chronicles our journey. And so literally, quite literally, after our very orgasmic and off the chain start into the lifestyle, because I had totally rediscovered myself and my sexuality, as I said, my body, I realized could do things that I didn't know that it could do before because I'd been with one partner for many, many years. And so I had this new explosive reality of what my body could do. And it was amazing and it was wonderful. And then age kicked in and I started going through the change that we ladies go through. So, you know, when we were though starting the lifestyle, back up a smidge, I was in my late 40s. And so I was still having periods. I was still reproductive as far as I knew. And so I said to my doctor at the time, actually my general practitioner, that I wanted to go on birth control because I was becoming sexually active. And even though I always played with condoms, I always played with partners with condoms, I didn't want to risk it. So I asked my doctor if I could go back on birth control at the age that I was, and we agreed that it would only be for a few years because there's health risks that you can take by taking hormones that late and in that dosage. But I decided that that was going to be something that I wanted to do. So that's why. So I stayed on birth control actually for a couple of years, and we did that until about 2022. So I went off birth control then, and we agreed at that point in time that really not only chronologically but metabolically, I'd probably gone through menopause at this point in time. So at this point in time, I'm 54, I think 53 or 54. I'd had two children. All of those things, all signs led to, and blood work led to the fact that I probably had gone through menopause or was just on the tail end of going through menopause. So that there was no way that that had not happened. I also want to point out here, because this is all not physical, there are a lot of mental components to life and stress. And in 2021, my mom had moved down to Florida to live here after my father had passed away. So she had moved down here a couple years earlier. And in 2021, she was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, the first person in my family ever to be diagnosed with Alzheimer's. And she also fell and broke her knee so badly that she is now wheelchair bound. So that all happened also. Okay. So I'm trying to paint the picture for you guys to kind of see where my life was going. So my mom has now moved to town. I'm not her main caregiver. She doesn't live with me, but I'm the person that takes care of her. I'm the oldest child. And so all of those things. And then my hormones are kicking in and kicking my ass. So after being off birth control, things got worse. My mood and emotions were all over the place. I was unhappy in most everything. And my sex drive was tanking. It was all I could do to even force myself to go out to lifestyle parties, which was such a huge shift for where we were a couple of years earlier. You know, it was so fun and that was all we wanted to do. And I was really struggling. After a few months after being off of hormones, my GYN did say we could go on hormone pellets. And I was so excited. I'd heard so many amazing things, and these women would get their pellets and it would be like the world had changed and the clouds lifted and the amazing music started. So I was so excited and ready. I was anxious and excited. And I said, yes, let's do it. Let's do it. And I got pellets and nothing happened. And so it really didn't change anything that I noticed or was aware of. So I was very sad that I had to continue to struggle and push on through and didn't quite get that amazing euphoria that some of the other women had experienced with their pellet journey. And so about a year later, so it was about a year ago, that I confessed to our podcast listeners that I was really struggling mentally and physically. Although I was familiar with being sad and depressed and anxious, I think everybody knows those feelings at some point in your life, I had not experienced clinical depression or anxiety like I have until now. So that was very hard for me. And I've worked with people in this field, and I've been in this field for a really, really long time. So I really do understand the depths of what depression and anxiety can do. But until it hits you smack in the face, you really don't really understand. Like I, for the first time, I really felt like I do know what it feels like for people who don't want to get out of bed. Like I hadn't had that feeling before. And that started happening to me, and that's not me. And that made me very scared and very sad. And so back in June of 2023, if you guys ever want to listen to it, it's episode 46. It's called Overcoming Open Relationship Obstacles, Finding Balance in the Swinger and Hot Wife Lifestyle. Tristan and I speak very openly and honestly about what I was going through at that time and still going through now. But we really spoke about it, and we talked a lot about how the stress and the strain has put our marriage and our lifestyle, fun and relationships kind of even on hold. But please go back. I don't want to go too much into it now, but you guys can go back and listen to that episode. But I mentioned how hopeless and helpless I was feeling, and I knew I needed to do something, and I just wasn't sure what it was. Maybe did I need a different doctor? You know, I'm a smart and educated woman. And I was very frustrated because I didn't even have an idea where to begin. I'd gone to my doctor and I'd gotten the information and I was told pellets were going to be great and they weren't. And my doctor was not helpful. She's like, well, we all go through stress. We're women. That's what we do. And she's a woman. And I was like, okay. And I walked out of her office going, we'll be looking for a new doctor, because I just was so sad with that response. And I get it, but she's a GYN. She was limited. So long story short, here I want to introduce now. I want to bring in Dr. Wards. We met Dr. Wards and her husband, her fabulous husband, by the way, a few months earlier in that year, last year, when we were traveling. And Dr. Wards had actually heard our podcast. And so she reached out and had a few suggestions. We're going to talk about that in a second. But let me first on bring Dr. Tanisha Wards on. Thank you, Dr. Tanisha, for being here. I'm so excited. Thanks for listening to my little backstory.
Yeah, thank you for having me. As you know, I'm a big fan of your podcast.
Thank you.
And so I'm excited to be on it right now.
I'm so happy that you're here. I'm so excited we got to do this. Let me introduce you guys all to Dr. Tanisha Wards and tell you about her fabulousness. Dr. Tanisha Wards is the founder of the Infinity Wellness Center in Austin, Texas, and the Energy Recovery System Online Functional Medicine Coaching Program, and is a holistic doctor who concentrates on chronic fatigue, GI issues, women's hormone issues from pre and post menopause to infertility, fibromyalgia, headaches, burnout, and insomnia. She believes in the importance of treating the whole person, not just the symptoms. Thousands of women have found Dr. Wards after not seeing results with traditional practitioners, cookie cutter programs, and expensive supplements. What? Does that sound anything like my backstory right there? Okay. Her holistic approach to wellness means she specializes in finding and correcting the core root cause to conditions like chronic fatigue, chronic pain, and fibromyalgia. Drawing from her personal struggles with Lyme disease, autoimmunity, and Epstein-Barr virus is where she finds the fuel to pursue her passion, helping people near and far. Again, thank you so much for being here.
Yes, absolutely.
I am so glad. And I am so excited to start this journey for myself with you, and hopefully with anybody else that needs help and guidance and assistance. The reason I wanted to do this is why we basically started the podcast too. There are people that are out there that need help and direction. And I'm so glad that you agreed to come on here with me and chronicle my journey as we go through this. First, before we get started about my stuff, tell us a little bit about what functional medicine is and how is it different from kind of traditional, what we call traditional, but Western medicine?
Yes. So functional medicine, our goal is to get your body functioning at its most optimal. And we do that by looking at different ranges, even in everything from blood work to hormones. Western medicine gives you a range from here to here in a lot of the labs. We're looking at a tighter range often. So is your body functioning at its most optimal? Your thyroid could be barely in range and you could have all the thyroid symptoms, but it's not in a, it's still in the pathological range, which is a larger range. So it's not a pathology or a disease yet, but yet you could have all the symptoms of it. And our goal is to not cover up those symptoms. And that's what a lot of Western medicine practices offer. Let's numb it. Let's cover it up. Let's mute it versus, well, why? Why are your numbers out of range? What's actually going on in the body that the hormones aren't, the signals aren't communicating properly to the receptor sites? What's blocking that? And so digging into finding what's actually going on and correcting it versus just giving you hormones or giving you something to cover up the symptoms. However, we do use hormones at times, knowing that doesn't fix the problem. The only time hormones will fix the problem long term is if you don't have all your parts. If you have a hysterectomy and they've taken the ovaries, do you need hormones long term? Oftentimes, our goal is to get the body to take the hormones it has and balance it itself. So that's the difference. Let's get your body functioning on its own is probably the biggest difference in the way that we practice and look at the body.
One of the things that really struck me, and so it's frustrating because I think we think that our doctors are already doing those things also. And it was very sad to me to realize exactly what you're saying is that there's only so much that they can do within this broad scope of things. And you're really just looking at all those symptoms and it's all that it is. It just seems to be so, I don't even think
that. They're like, there's a symptom, there's this fault. Yes. There's something there. The other thing that you mentioned, your OBGYN had her hands tied a little bit, right? And I think that's a huge problem in our medical system is that everybody has a specialty and they're forgetting that it's all connected. It's absolutely all connected. Most depression and anxiety, for example, starts with gut health. And people that specialize in mental health and psychology and psychiatry aren't looking at that necessarily, unless they're looking at the body as a whole. Functional medicine, holistic medicine, those words are kind of interchangeable. I think functional medicine is being used more, but looking at the body as a whole and knowing that most of our serotonin is made in our gut lining, 80% of it, and it goes to our brain. They're calling the gut the second brain. So when somebody has depression and they come in and I start asking about gut health and we start fixing and healing some GI issues and their mood changes, you're like, oh, how did that happen? Why are you looking at my gut when I came in for depression and anxiety and insomnia? And it's because it's all connected. And I think that's the biggest miss right now in Western medicine is a mentor of mine said this, the more specialized your doctor gets, the dumber they get. Like they're only now looking for, another mentor of mine said, don't look for zebras. You're going to find the zebras, right? Like you have to look at the whole system and where is the body malfunctioning or dysfunctioning, and how can we bridge those gaps and help the body? I truly believe, and I see this every day, if we give the body what it's lacking and take away what it has too much of, whether that's hormones, toxicity, chemicals, environmental chemicals, the body can then balance itself. And that's where we're missing. We're just putting more chemicals or more things into the body to numb it.
So you just made me think of about 1,000 other questions or 1,000 other comments that I had, and we'll get to some of them too. But, and so, and even what you said, my next comment or my next thought was, you know, when I started to do this and was all very confusing to me, because you even said it, like, so are there differences between saying holistic medicine, fundamental medicine, integrative medicine, alternative medicine, which I know is just more of a thing, but I just kind of, what are some of the other terms, and are those all the same things? There's even, oh shoot, I forgot to write it down. The one you even talk about it on your website. There's something that says functional versus
conventional or allopathic.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. And I forgot to write that down because what are all those things? And as I'm looking for those things, or if people are looking for resources in their areas, what are they going to be looking for?
I think functional medicine is a word being used most right now, but yes, longevity is another big word being used right now in trying to get the body to function better on its own. I've been in practice almost 18 years. April next month will be 18 years. And the first 10 years, it was holistic medicine. And then it's kind of moved into more of a term functional. It is really the same thing mostly. I think looking a little deeper into what the practitioner's focus is and purpose is probably what somebody should look for in resources. Are they trying to get the body to function on its own? Are they trying to get the body to truly heal is probably what you're looking for.
And the reason I asked that is because when I went to research and Google, it was very tough to find because there are so many names that are out there. And so I didn't know, am I just looking for somebody that's functional? But if it says holistic, is that the same? Or if they're integrative, is that the other one that people are using?
Integrative is another good one. Integrative, probably the definition of integrative medicine is combining Western and more holistic or more Eastern medicine or more natural herbs and supplements. They're probably doing a little bit of both, which truly is probably the best definition of my practice. Like if somebody's in pain or if somebody, their hormones are on the ground, we will give them hormones while we're fixing the problem in the background. However, a lot of integrative medicine practices really are just giving the synthetic hormones and the symptoms go away, but now you're dependent on those and you're not well without them. And that's not the goal. That's not healing. That's not actually balancing. That's just becoming dependent on a hormone. So it is confusing and you do have to kind of do the research. Like what's the end goal here? The end goal is to get you well, not dependent on anything. At least that's our practice goal.
And that is so huge. And I think that's something that people don't think about, but I've been very lucky to always think about it. It's like, I don't do a lot of things unless I know what my exit strategy is. You know, and so it's like, I don't want to have to be on something for the rest of my life, unless it's like something that I definitely have, like my body is now not functioning, doing something that it can't make on its own anymore, something like that. And I don't have anything against anybody who whatever they need to do. But for my own self, my own strategy is always like, and we're going to talk a little bit about this too, about like what to make sure that I can manage on my own if that's my end goal. So just to clarify, some of the other things too that made me nervous about functional medicine is that, and I love what you just said, if you have someone that needs hormones, you're going to give them hormones while you're helping them fix. Because my thing was, it sounds like this is such a long and drawn out process. And I don't know about everybody else, but I like a fix it solution right now. Like I want the Band-Aid. I'm not going to lie. I'm the people that they put the shit at the end of the aisle cap at the grocery store because they know I'm an impulse buy it. You know, like I want a quick fix. And I think that that's part of why, I'm being honest. I mean, it's part of why I was like, ugh, you know, this is going to take like a year to fucking figure out what's wrong. But now if I had done that 2 years ago, I'd have been a year into my recovery and not a year later. But it just feels so like a mountain in front of you. And that was part of what was hard for me, because I'm like, how do we even begin to find these root causes, all this stuff? It seems so overwhelming.
That is a really good point. I do believe in Western society, we're quick fix people, right? We want to take the pill and feel better. And there is a time and a place for that. And like I said, we will do that if needed, but all healing takes time. It takes a minimum 60 to 90 days for cells to rejuvenate. So if symptoms go away with a quick fix or a pill, it's being muted or covered up, right? It's not actually fixing and healing. And that's the hard part, is finding what's wrong and doing the right thing in the right order, knowing the systems and the way the body can upregulate and heal takes time to do it. And that's what's hard. However, when it's balanced, it's much easier to keep you there. And it's much easier to stay in a state of homeostasis or balance once we can get you there. So it is worth the work. And it takes time and work once we figure out what's going on to do the right things in the right order. For example, if we find that there's a toxicity of a chemical, we can't jump to a straight detox. And I say chemical can be a synthetic hormone. You can have an excess of synthetic hormones in the system causing a lot of symptoms if your body doesn't detox those properly. I see that all the time. But we can't jump to a detox if we don't know that the lymph system, the liver, and the kidneys can handle it. So we sometimes have to do a lot of foundational groundwork of getting the body ready to go after the thing that we found. And that's part of the program and part of our process of healing from the ground up and really looking at what can the body handle. Is the digestive tract working for us to do a detox? Those types of things do take time. They take time.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm glad you're being very open and honest about that, because I that's a huge thing for me. But I will tell you also, in my own thinking about it, the other piece is, so I'm in my mid 50s now. I have possibly 20 more years. I mean, I'm very lucky to be in an area where I get to see women that are 70, in their 70s and their 80s, still very incredibly sexually active. And that's something that I want for my life. It's amazing to see. And I'm just like, I want to be her when I grow up. And it's like, you know, I don't. Right. And it's like, you know, she's 75 and rocking it. And I'm like, you know what? So yeah, if it takes me even 3 years to figure this out, holy shit, I'll have 20 years of vitality at this age where everybody else is starting to really decline. And the other thing too, Dr. Tanisha, is that seeing my mom. So this is a huge piece for me. We're going to talk about all these pieces, parts in our series as we move forward with this. But, you know, my mom now is, she's in her early 80s and being wheelchair bound because she fell and didn't have good brain and good physicality to be able to rehab properly, that she unfortunately did herself no good and is wheelchair bound because she couldn't do those things. And it's like, I watched this over the last 2 years. And I'm like, I come hell or high water, I do not want to be a little old fragile lady. And I'm big. I'm over 6 feet. So it's not going to be, I have to do things for my body that I know that it's already starting to break down. And it's, I just don't want to be there.
I can relate to that. My parents are in their 60s and retired to the recliner. My father is dealing with dementia. So I absolutely can relate with what you're going through. And I feel like a lot of people in this generation, I'm in my mid 40s, the emotional intelligence and I think the realization of we want more and longer for our life. I feel like that kind of thought of you retire after 25, 30 years and you're just kind of sedentary. I see a lot of people in this generation are like, no, I want to travel and I want to be active and I want to go to all the lifestyle things, right? And so to do that, we have to take care of our bodies and our health and ourselves in order to have the longevity and to have the vitality to do that. And that's one of my favorite things about being in practice, is seeing people literally go from bedridden to back doing whatever brings them purpose and passion, and seeing that again in their life is huge. And it's possible. It's possible for everybody. It's absolutely possible for you. Hearing more of your story, I think I already know what probably happened around that time. Your mom came down. I'm thinking your adrenal glands, you hit burnout. The glands that pump adrenaline and cortisol are like, we're overworked, underpaid. We're not doing this anymore. And what the connection there is, to get a little medical, the pituitary gland in the brain is your master gland. It's also your third eye in spirituality. A lot of people look at that. It controls all hormones downstream. It communicates with your thyroid. The thyroid, it communicates with your adrenal glands, which are two tiny little quarter-sized glands that sit on top of your kidneys. They then send the signal down to your ovaries, or in a male, a testes, when and how much to release estrogen, testosterone, progesterone. But if they're over here dealing with crises, they're over here robbing Peter to pay Paul, they're dealing with the tiger or the bear that's coming at us, which could be a boss or a parent or kids or the IRS, whatever it is. We're only meant to be in that stress state for minutes to hours, not weeks, months, years. I'm suspecting, and we'll know with some testing, that they stopped doing their job sending the signal down to the hormone, down to the ovaries, excuse me, to balance your hormones. And so hormones are now either just not happening or happening out of balance. That's definitely one thought there, that is a burnout thing, which I think is a huge epidemic in this country, specifically for women, right? We're doing it all. We're doing the momming. Some of us are in business. Some of us are in corporations, right? We're now bringing home the bacon and cooking it and feeding it to the kids and having more babies, right? And I think it's a lot to handle. And then you throw something like a crisis on that, whether it's a divorce or a sick parent or some other financial crisis, our endocrine system says, like, give up. And then what suffers first thing is our hormones,
which then is just a slippery slope for everything else.
Absolutely. That's definitely one theory and thought, just hearing. I don't think I chronologically actually heard all of that together. And I was like, whoa.
Yeah, that's why I wanted to kind of wanted to read it, so that people could kind of truly understand. Because again, I knew what my chronological history was with all of that stuff. So speaking of which, what I wanted to then talk about was actually how we met a little bit there. So what happened was, you heard this episode. Well, had we met already before?
Nope, I just stalked you. So when we got into lifestyle, which is about 2.5 years ago now, I was consuming all the information, all of it. And your guys' podcast just stood out, and I binge listened to it. Specifically, episode 25 was a huge game changer for my husband and I, that realized that, you know, we're probably deeper invested people than just swinging. We're probably more on the poly end, and that was okay. Your podcast made us realize, like, hey, we've caught feelings here and there, and that's okay. And so I've been stalking you on social media, listening every time it dropped. Found out we were going to be at the same event. And I just reached out, hey guys, fangirl, I'm going to come say hi. I won't make it weird. But I did make it weird. And and then probably 2-3 months, that was April last year, 2-3 months after you dropped the podcast, that you weren't doing well. And I listened to it and I sat on it, and I would consider us friends at that point. We hung out an entire weekend at an event off and on. And of course I felt like I knew you and was your best friend already, but you got to meet me for the first time. And I sat on it. I actually talked to my husband about it and said, hey, I don't want to cross the line, but it's kind of what I do. Women with burnout is probably 85 to 90% of my practice. And a lot of that turns into depression, anxiety, autoimmune diseases, all the things where people end up bedridden. And I'm like, hey, I feel like you're right on the fence, and there's a lot that can be done here fast. And at the time, I didn't actually offer my services. I said, hey, I'm telehealth. I can see people all over the country. However, let me find you somebody in Florida. Like, there's help. And you were like, well, I don't know. And then you kind of did some research. I said, you know what? I want it done right. Let me do it myself.
I so appreciate that. That's exactly what I was going to say. And I am so glad that, and I didn't know either, that you were like, ooh, should I reach out or not? I'm so glad that you did. I'm just so happy that you did. And absolutely. And I remember getting the text, and I'm like, oh my God, how did I not know? I think I even texted you about, like, how did I not know you're a functional medicine doctor? Like, how did we make through an entire weekend not talking about that? But as we all know, for lifestyles, a lot of time you never even talk about what you're due for a living. It's not about that. It's just we're meeting each other and we're on different levels. And so a lot of times you don't know what people do until you've known them for a while. And so I was like, how did I not know that? But of course, how would I have known that? Because we're just talking about other things at the time. But
your husband knew what I did a little bit, though. I don't think he put it together, but I think he knew a little. I think we talked a little bit about my practice. But you're right. In that community, that's one of the things I love, right? Is people get to know each other without identifying with what we do. You get to know each other of who are you first, which I love. But yeah, I don't think you put it together that most of my practice is middle-aged women who just aren't functioning at the level that they want to anymore because of stresses.
And he would have instantly said, talk to Tanisha about it. You know, oh my God, this is what she does. So he didn't connect the dots, but that was okay. Totally fine. Because the way that it happened was great. And so when, and you did, were lovely to give me some resources. And again, though, I want to point out, I'm going through all this stress. There's all this stuff going on. And I even looked stopped. I contacted that particular doctor who is hours away, but you trusted him. So I was going to give it a shot. And I thought, you know, still now I'm still have no one that's close, you know, and I still don't have anybody that I can reach out to and use as a resource. So I reached out to you again and I said, okay, well, I know he's there, but what's the, like the name of like the network provider, you know, that I can Google so I can find somebody in this area that I can talk to so that if I have something that I really need to talk to somebody about that I can reach out to. And that's when you're like, oh, let's just do this. And I'm, cause I trust, I would do that in 2 seconds. But we were, because you're in Texas and I'm in Florida. So it was like going to be tough, but I'm so happy that we decided to do it this way. So we decided to work together as doctor and patient. So I wanted to say to all of our listeners that when Tanisha and I talked about doing this, and I said, I really would love to chronicle this. And we talked about what that would look like for her coming on and us doing a little bit of a series. I would love this to be kind of like a series for health, not only just my stuff, but I think there's a lot of things that we can touch on. And I'm hope that we can talk about a lot of these things as we chronicle all of this for everybody. But what I want you guys to know is, so this far, the interview today, the only thing I've done is I filled out the initial intake information that Dr. Ward sent me from her office, which was this crazy online questionnaire. And then she has then now recommended the tests that she wants me to do, and I have not done them yet. So I wanted to share that with everybody. Before we actually, I was going to show everybody, I think I'm going to do that in a second. Yeah. Before we actually start and talk about all that, I want to talk about the elephant in the room, which was a huge elephant for me, which is the money. Functional medicine and treating yourself, it seems to me in the research that I did is that not a lot of insurance, traditional healthcare insurance companies cover this type of proactive care, or it seems to me that the doctors don't take the insurance. I'm not really sure which way it goes. I've worked in the healthcare field for a while, so I know some about how insurance and claims and things like that go, but it looks to me like the majority of patients pay out of pocket and it's not cheap. So can we talk about that a little bit? Because I do want people to understand. I'm very lucky to be able to work and be able to afford to do this for myself. And so we're eventually going to have to talk about some hacks too, but today we're just going to talk about this stuff.
Yes. So I could do a whole podcast on this. I truly believe that the insurance system is sick care and they do not want to get you. Very, very little do they cover things like this. And for me to bill insurance, it would be a 7-minute appointment. It'd be a 7 to 10 minute appointment. And it's sad. And I've lobbied for this and I've been very vocal on podcasts about how corrupt and dysfunctional our healthcare system is. It's driven by money and the pharmaceutical companies. And, you know, again, we can go completely down a rabbit hole there of them keeping us sick. And I truly believe that at my core, that system does not want us to get well. I really, really believe that is not their purpose. So things that help people heal in the labs that we use oftentimes don't take insurance, and different herbs and bioidentical hormones and those things aren't often covered by insurance. There are a couple that do, and we take things like health savings and flex savings accounts that we can run through as nutritional codes and nutritional consults. But even right down to our, I truly believe this too, our food supply and our food system is making us sick with chemicals and pesticides and things. So I wish it was different. I wish they covered this. And we fought for it and lobbied for it, and it just isn't. It's not in the docket yet for insurance companies to recognize that this is how people heal. The things that get people really well, there's not a lot of money in it. It is not a get rich play to help people move their bodies, eat properly and heal their gut and balance their hormones using natural substances that can't be patented and replicated by a pharmaceutical company through the FDA, because they can't do that to a plant.
Right.
That's the crux of it. There's not the money in it, sadly. And again, I've been very vocal about this in the public eye of how it's wrong. It's backwards. The things that are getting us well are not the things that are offered first line of defense. Your doctor in a 7-minute appointment is not going to ask you what you're eating before bed and how is your sleep being affected by that ever, or what you're doing on screen time or some of the things that we dive into, or what your stress level's like. They just like, oh, life is stressful kind of thing. Like you got, let me give you this to numb the stress. Versus how can I help my body to adapt because my system's not capable of doing it, which is a very different perspective on it.
Yeah.
So it's mostly out of pocket, unfortunately. We try to make it as easy and as affordable as possible, but it's mostly out of pocket.
Yeah, it's pricey. And so I'm going to explain a little bit because I want to be very open and honest with folks. So I think you ordered me a blood panel and two other, and I'm going to show some of this stuff. And it was just over $1,200. And that's just for the labs for that.
I will also address that the blood panel, I think this is important. The blood panel that we run has 55 markers that are looking at much deeper thyroid levels and autoimmune levels that you'll get at like an annual. And if we were to run this blood panel, which I get it for about $450, I believe $375 or $450, because I belong to a co-op and paid to be a part of this process with other functional medicine doctors. If we were to run that through insurance, it's about a $1,800 to $2,200 blood panel. And get this, 90% of the time, the insurance company will kick it back because they say you're not sick enough for these levels. And I'd say 80% of the time, we find that these levels are out of balance. Well, how do you know you're sick enough for those levels if you can't get the levels, if you can't get the blood work run because you're not sick enough? Well, you don't know if you're sick enough because you don't know if it's out of balance because you haven't had it run. And to get some of these blood panels, first of all, I think it should be completely against the law that the insurance company can charge thousands for something that we actually can pay hundreds for, which is wild. And genetics is another one. 10 years ago to run genetics, it might've been a $3,000 panel. Now it's like a $700 panel. So the prices, we've done a lot of things to bring it down and make it affordable. However, to have a dual service fee like that, that's the problem with the insurance company. I mean, that's the problem with getting this covered. When you can charge the same thing to an insurance company, of course, now insurance costs more because you're charging more for it. And 9 times out of 10, a patient gets kicked back and they might have to pay $900 of that panel when they could have paid cash for something. So I've just completely stepped out of the insurance world a long time ago. And of course they can resubmit it. I can change the codes. We might get more covered, but most of the time they end up paying their portion more than the cash price of the co-op, which is just frustrating all in itself to get the data that could be the problem.
So are there, I would suspect that if I came to you and I said, I'm feeling these things, or I did my intake stuff, but I have limited funds. Like, can we, if I have $500, is there something that we can do at least for this? Or can you work, do you work with patients to kind of say, okay, well, we have this limited time now. Let's do, this is our triage. Let's do this first. And then in a couple more months, we can do this or something like that.
Of course, it's good to see the full picture as much as we can, right? The more data we can get on the patient and they do have the means to do, the better, but absolutely we can stair step that. And I do take a lot of pro bono cases, probably more than I should. One of my big, big dreams, and we've filed the paperwork, is a nonprofit to help people to bring functional medicine everywhere. That's my big, big, like if I were to win the lottery tomorrow kind of thing. We've named it, we've filed the paperwork, and just now I tell everybody about it because I know the funding's coming. I still
don't know. We'll talk about it too then, and we'll make sure they get all the information up there if anybody wants to. I don't even know. If anybody knows anybody or anything that can help out Dr. Ward's with all this stuff, that would be amazing because we're out there suffering.
Filed it. Functional Medicine for Everyone is the name of the nonprofit. So we've got the paperwork. We just now have to, I'm in the process of creating a board and moving forward with that. That's a big dream in my spare time. But yeah, I tell everybody about it and hope somebody writes a check someday.
What's it called again?
Functional Medicine for Everyone.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I'm writing that down. Okay. So let's see. We talked about the cost. So I want to talk about a little bit about now the process that I went through already. So we did the intake, and I have to tell you, just in your intake, there was that, this is what stopped me. Actually, this is probably the intake questionnaire was probably the thing that made me say, holy shit, there's so much more here than I even know, because they're asking such crazy ass questions. And I know they're not asking these questions because they don't mean something like this. There's a meaning. Yeah. And so this is me. I'm a detective. I'm like, so what are they trying to figure out with, does my poop smell? Like, it was such a level of questions. And so it was things like, yeah, so bowel movement and how are they? And I'm like, that is so personal. Like, are they hard? Are they soft? And I'm like, okay, I know there's a reason they're asking these questions. Things about, brain fog. And oh my God, really?
I knew it was close. every time I meet with a patient, they rate their poop. You're only as healthy as your gut. You're only as healthy as your stool. Every conversation, a lot of it goes back to, yep, a 3 out of 4 is normal. This is constipated. This is loose. And that all means something. That either means your large intestine isn't working properly, your liver and gallbladder are breaking down your fats. And so if you're not breaking down fats, you can't absorb them, and your brain doesn't function without good fats. So all of that matters. The beginning of every patient visit, I have them chart and rate their bowel movements. That is incredibly important. And in our country, we don't talk about it. And you are only as healthy as your gut function. 80% of our immune system is in our gut. You've probably seen these yogurt commercials that talk about, you know, the good probiotics. They fight bugs, they fight infections. Our immune system is all gut-based. Our brain chemicals are made in our gut lining. We're absorbing all of our B vitamins and our D, and everything is happening through absorption. And if that's not working, you don't have the nutrients to make the hormones or to make the brain chemicals. That matters. And we can't get those nutrients from processed foods. We just can't. The standard American diet, the SAD diet. And that's the hard part, right? That's the hard part of teaching people where health comes from, because I think we've just gotten so far away from real balance and homeostasis in the body, from eating from the earth and things that are grown versus processed. And all of that, yeah, all of that goes down. If someone can tell me what their bowel movements are doing, and I'm like, I know what's wrong. And we just miss that. Yeah. So we definitely ask a lot about poop and to address our intake form. It's 13 pages long, and we're going through every single organ and body system. We're asking, are you cold? Is your hair thinning? You know, weight gain, weight loss, thyroid stuff. We're asking, yeah, are you having loose stools? Every time you eat a fatty food, you have to run to the bathroom. That's liver and gallbladder. And if that's not working, most of our hormones are broken down and made in our liver, including our thyroid hormones. So if you're having a lot of loose stools, I know you're not making thyroid hormones properly in the liver. Yeah.
See?
Yes. So, like, again, it's all connected. It's all connected. So there is purpose. And I consider myself a detective too, kind of like Dr. House, like, okay, this and this and that, and how, and where do we start?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I was fascinated by that. So I was like, oh, they seem so inconsequential. And yeah, and I was blown away by the level of detail and the level that you dove down to. And again, I knew instantly, I was like, oh my God, there's so much more here that I don't even understand, that if this is a problem, like, I always just thought, this is so silly. So I've had weight issues all my life. I've always been heavy, and I'm a natural weight now for the last couple of years. So I get cold all the time, and I'm like, ooh, it's because I'm so thin now. Like, before, I couldn't get cold because I was too fat.
I mean, there's some truth to that. Yeah. There is some truth to that. Certain fat is more insulating. Absolutely.
Right. So now I'm like, well, it's just because I'm so thin now and Barbie-like, which, so I'm not. I'm not at all. But in my mind, I was like, yes, I'm getting cold at night because I'm not as full. But there's other things, because no, I have this cold that I get now is like, it's chill in my bones. My husband's like, got the fan blowing on him. And I'm like, where are my slippers and my long sleeve shirt? And I'm like, this was on Dr. Tanisha's questionnaire. I think there might be something. I really seriously is like, oh my God, is there something going on with it? And I've noticed it a lot. And there's all these changes. And it's like, now I'm paying attention. So I wanted to show everybody.
It's probably metabolic. Yeah.
Yeah. I should not ever be cold. And I do. And it happens more at night, I think, anyway. So we'll talk about that too. But so I filled out the questionnaire, you decided to order the things, and then you guys sent me the blood work stuff. And so, like I said, we're getting ready to do that now, but I wanted to show everybody. So everything is done, because you're in Texas and I'm in Florida. So you sent me the requisitions to get the blood work done. And then you sent me these, the little lab kits that showed up. Now this one's blue, so it's not, there we go. So it's just a little box that came, but I thought it'd be fun to show everybody, since I still have it, since I haven't sent it in yet, everything that comes. So the whole kit comes together. I'm holding this in front of me. So there's all this stuff. I filled out my paperwork already. See, I filled it out. So I've got you do a little assessment for them too. And then this one happens to be, it comes with a little, show everybody, it comes with a little styro box and a little cold pack, which is in my freezer, because I'm getting ready to send my samples out. So you take the cold pack out and put it in the freezer to freeze before you do your samples. And then this one happens to be a urine and a saliva. And so what I didn't realize, so this is the saliva one. See, lots of different color tubes there. What I also didn't realize is that when I took out the instructions to read how to do this, in my mind, I'm just going to pee in a little doodah and send it off. Apparently not that easy. And you have to plan. So because I didn't understand. So can you want to talk about why I can't do this? Just take this out and pee in a cup and go?
Yeah, is that the neurotransmitter test?
I think so, yeah.
Yep, the brain chemicals. So we do that in urine, and it's the first morning urine before you've consumed anything. So it's more concentrated. And what that's telling us is serotonin, dopamine, GABA levels. These are your brain chemicals. Epinephrine, norepinephrine are going to tell us what your adrenal glands are doing. And also the saliva portion of it runs your cortisol levels. And so you'll take a saliva sample through 24 hours. And in the morning, your cortisol should be really high, ideally. Sun's coming up, your pituitary gland is awakening. You should start producing a lot of the brain chemicals in the morning, and cortisol, your adrenal gland should be high. And then we take one at noon, mid-afternoon, and midnight. And ideally, your cortisol should go high in the morning and slowly lower throughout the day. So you should have a lot of energy and it should slowly lower. What I'm looking for is if your circadian rhythms are flipped at all, meaning cortisol is low in the morning, and this is a majority of my patients. I can hardly get out of bed. I'm exhausted in the morning. My brain doesn't turn on till 10. And then I get this weird second wind around 9 p.m. So if your cortisol is flipped, that's indicative, and there's four stages of adrenal fatigue. Some labs look at eight. That's indicative of adrenal fatigue, where your adrenal glands, they're flipped. They're confused day and night because they're so stressed. So you're pumping out cortisol at night when you're trying to sleep. And that's one of the big issues for insomnia. So yes, the tests are very precise and time consuming. And we want to get it right to get the most accurate data for sure with it to see.
Yeah. And I was going to say on this one too, this was the neurotransmitter and hormone analysis. I think you sent me two, and then the blood panel and whatever. But with this one, I think it is, there's one of them that talks about, oh yeah, it is this one. Yeah. So it's a 3-day process basically, because you have to actually start to take out some foods that I'm sure are going to mess up the test. So it's like 2 days before you don't eat tomatoes. And I'm like, well, fuck, I eat tomatoes like every day. So what I realize, and why I'm telling everybody this and showing you guys this, is that you do have to kind of plan. And I can see, I want to make sure I get it right the first time. So it's like, but now I have to make sure that I'm doing this if it's a 3-day process, and you have to be paying attention on the day that you're doing your collection too. So it's like I have to make sure I'm not eating any of these. Nuts was another one. I constantly eat nuts as just a quick protein boost. And so I literally am going to have to make sure that I'm planning out and making sure I'm not doing anything that I don't accidentally screw up my own test results. Cause for that kind of money, I don't want to mess up my test results. So it's very important.
Those foods in particular are high in histamine. And so they can make you look a little more inflamed than you might be. They're high in histamine. Think about peppers and tomatoes. Sometimes your nose runs with those. Yep. So if somebody has a huge histamine reaction, that can skew the results a little bit.
And I think I said, so I don't take allergy medication too, because that's a histamine issue as well.
Blocker. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So one other thing, since I have you with me, can I ask you this question as well?
Yes.
It did also talk about not taking anything that was, I think, I can't remember exactly, like maybe it was said something about mood altering or something like that. I can't remember. You're supposed to kind of not do some of the supplements or things that you're doing. Our listeners know, and as you know, about our episode that we released on 420, I am a cannabis friendly person. I don't use it a lot, but I do use it at night. So should I stop any of that also before I take this test, any kind of THC or CBD intake?
No, that would be fine to stay on. We're looking more if someone's taking 5-HTP, which is a serotonin producer. So their serotonin may look really high because they took 5-HTP the night before. Now, if somebody's on an SSRI, an antidepressant, we need to talk to their prescribing doctor. Can they go off it for a couple of days? Maybe not. That may not be the right thing. And that we talk about that, but no more. Some people take certain amino acids and nutrients that increase brain chemistry, and we could get a false reading. So we want to know what your body's doing on its own. We want to know what it's doing on its own, but no, cannabis isn't going to change that.
Okay. I just want to make sure. Because I know you're
doing a short half-life too with it too. So it'll probably be out of your system by morning. I mean, in the fact that the effects that it's having.
Right. I just didn't want to skew anything. If you're looking for anything there, it's obviously going to be in blood and in saliva if that THC shows up in that. So. Okay. So here's what's going to happen. So I'm going to end up doing my kits. We're going to send those off. I know I'm going to have to, so I'm going to do it. I think Sunday, Monday, Tuesday are going to be my three, like don't eat nuts and tomatoes days, whatever those are. And we'll go ahead and get those off to you. So then what happens? What's going to happen next in my process?
I get the labs in about 5 to 10 business days. So a couple of weeks. And then we set up a second appointment. Typically is the report of findings or report of labs. And I pretty much at that point spell everything out. This is what we found. This is our plan to fix it. This is where we need to start. This is where we need to end. And then we talk about our starting point with it. So we go over all the labs and really tell you what's out of balance, what that means, and how we fix it. And then typically at that point, I meet with people about monthly. We have a nutritionist and health coach and other people that meet with them in between. We do have a team approach that is worth mentioning. We look at something called MBSR, mind, body, spirit release, because I truly believe held traumas in the body can cause illnesses. So we do a lot of that releasing. We have someone who works on nutrition with a person based on what we found. And then a health coach that really is kind of my liaison, keeps them on track. And then I come in every month or so and change and personalize the protocols based on what the labs are and what they found. So the next right steps.
So once we do that and decide on a course of treatment, we will then, if you don't mind, come back on and do another episode that talks about what that looks like. And we may even record that call if you're okay with that, but I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I don't know what my results are going to be, but you know what? Yeah. We're going to be transparent. We're going to be open and honest and, you know, whatever. I don't know, whatever. I just have lady problems, I'm sure. So whatever it is, but I'm so excited though. I really am. And I have to say, I'm glad that we're able to do it this way. And I'm guessing that things change within people's bodies, even within, like, January was such a hellacious month for me, which is why I decided not to do this in January, because it was just too much. And I was like, not only that, I was shutting down. I knew I was. I mean, yeah. I was on the brink. It was bad. I think if we can talk about the next episode, we'll talk about something that I found that accidentally found that helped some with some of that. But the thing I wanted to kind of close out with here, because we're now moving on this process. So now I'm in this in-between time. I've got probably 3, maybe 4 weeks before we actually get back together and can talk about what's going to do. After listening to you and knowing from my own research and studies, but not really thinking as much about it, everything obviously comes down to your gut.
A lot of it does. And now that we're talking, I'm wondering if we should run a stool test. Not that we're talking about it. Yes.
I don't know. I can just show you.
There are some blood markers that will indicate something called leaky gut that I can definitely roll with in the blood. Sometimes it's underlying infections. We look at parasites, bacteria, fungus in the GI tract that's blocking brain chemical production and things. So sometimes it's as simple as just healing the gut. The lining is thinning and leaking. You don't have all the good nutrients and the good probiotics to make all of the things you need to make and to absorb the things you need to absorb. That I can find through blood, through some markers. So we may need to, we could wait and see the blood. We could run it and just say, I want all the data. But yeah, you may have to tell me. I'll have to look at your intake again. You may have to take a poop sample.
You know, I'm down with that. If we want to do it, my alcohol intake is, you know, high. Although it's lower these days, it definitely is lower.
Inflammatory to the intestinal tract. And that, you know, that may be a really good conversation. And I know you guys have touched on it a little bit, alcohol in the lifestyle. Like, it just seems to go hand in hand. And I don't love it. I hear people say all the time, I drink more than I ever have going to lifestyle events. And yeah, it's an inflammatory chemical is probably the bigger problem with it. It inflames, it's hard on the liver, it's hard on the GI tract to digest. It is a big one. And to heal the gut, I often have to take people off alcohol for 3 to 4 to 5 weeks to rebuild the gut kind of thing. And then we can get stuck in this whole retox and detox kind of thing. And it's hard to get ahead.
Well, and so my next question would be, are some alcohols more irritating than others?
I do think beer and wine is harder to digest. It has a lot of histamine. We talked about that in it. Beer has a lot of yeast. Wine can be hard to digest also if it has a lot of preservatives in it. And that's hard on the body and the gut that has to break it down. I do believe that clear liquor is the easiest to digest on the system. So like alcohols and tequila. And I do think that there's a difference in quality of that versus the cheap to the, you know, ask somebody about their hangovers, right? What that looks like. But what gets a lot of people is the mixers. That's just a lot of added excess sugar now that the gut's having to break down and work on and inflamed, right? A lot of people look puffy after they have alcohol or they feel bloated. And that all of that's an indication that your body is not breaking down what you're putting in the body. It's having a hard time processing that.
That makes so much sense. And not that I would have ever been able to connect those dots, but for myself, like now that I've gotten older, I can't sit and drink pina coladas all day long. I just want to throw up. It's like I can do one and even like, you know, and I find the least sugary one that I can. Never even really thought about that too. So yeah, I mean, I've gone to like the neutrals. I really like neutrals or White Claws or High Noons, the things that are just the vodka seltzer because there's so little sugar in them. I mean, they're not. But yeah, we should do it. We should talk about that too. What I was going to say though with the alcohol. So I drink on Fridays and Saturdays and then maybe once during the week, usually sometimes I've almost always had a bad day at some point in time in the week where I will have 3 or 4 drinks in one particular night because I'm just like, fuck it. you know, and it's usually after a rough day with my mom or something like that. And that is a lot for me. Three or four drinks is a lot in one night to just sit. Lately, my drinking, because of everything else, the other stuff that we're doing and I'm working on to change my body, is really helping. And so my tolerance of alcohol, I just don't drink it as much anymore.
So when people say my tolerance has lowered, ding, 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 that's a big one that like, oh, I bet your liver is going to come back inflamed. If your tolerance is lowered, the liver is what breaks it down. My thought is the liver struggling. And that would make a whole lot of sense with your hormones. Because again, the liver is where hormones are made and broken down. So yeah, tolerance isn't like, oh, I'm just getting old. It's like, well, we've been on this earth long enough to be pretty toxic and the liver's busy. So it can't break it down as well. I have a lot of patients that travel, entertain for work, have to go out to the golf course and drink some beers. And they are the people that will do a cleanse twice a year to not feel so crappy all the time and sluggish with alcohol and things. So that's the hard part too, right? Like we still have to live. People still have to function and exist. And again, I have this patient that's like, I take my clients on the golf course. We have six beers. How can I not feel bad and sluggish all the time? And so meeting people where they're at and still helping them find a happy medium and function. You know, not everybody's going to go crunchy hippie and only eat from farmers markets the rest of their life. We have to try to find a way. And that's where I found, you know, clear liquor and other things, maybe just mixing it with straight water, not even soda water, which I can talk about how the fizzies lower your hydrochloric acid, your stomach acid, and actually make your next couple meals less digestible just drinking soda water, right? So there's some biohack for that, that you can still have a good time and function and not feel like death come Sunday morning. kind of thing because the liver is so sluggish.
So then before we wrap up here, so I'm in between, again, I'm going to have a couple of weeks and I would like to continue to do some research about some things that I can do for myself. And again, listening to you talking about gut health, I know that that is something that would be good for me to start to pay attention to. An interim kind of like now that I'm, what can I do now? What can I start now that, so if anybody's listening now also, like say they need to come find their doctor, they've got maybe a 3-month process ahead of them, but what can we do now that we can start ourselves on a road that is easy to understand, but that we can start to do some things that can help our bodies?
So, gosh, if I were to say 3 things that just make people feel better right away, eating as close to the earth as possible, if it's not picked, killed, or grown, really think about it and try to counteract that a little bit. Okay, I know I'm going to go out here and eat processed foods. Maybe my other 2 meals are going to be home cooked, and looking at the oils that we're eating and try not to eat out of a box as much. We use this with our 8-year-old. It's a go food or a slow food. Is this food going to help me go or is it going to slow me down? Is the sugar going to make me feel sluggish or should I eat protein and good fats and fruits and vegetables? So cleaning up the diet, a low inflammatory diet is one that is Googled often, or paleo-like. I'm not necessarily like, it has to be carnivore or vegan or keto. Eat as close to the earth as possible. And a big one is in season. Colorful. Eat the rainbow. Let's eat what is being grown locally as much as we can, because that's going to be the least processed, the freshest, the most nutrient dense. So cleaning up diet, just those little things of eating one day a week, nothing out of a package, could be that simple and that complicated and hard. That takes time and effort and prep. That's one. The other is absolutely turning off screens 2 hours before bed. I know. I will take an hour.
I play solitaire in bed.
I will take an hour to 45 minutes if I can. What that does is it keeps your right brain active and it keeps your right brain pumping cortisol and adrenaline because the light's coming in. And so calming that, what we want is we want your body to produce its own melatonin at night, and it won't do that with lights. So sleep hygiene or sleep habits of shutting it down, shutting the brain down. I have a lot of patients, I have them playing the math game, like on paper and pencils, Sudoku or writing, or even the TV is better because it's not right here. Although that does keep the right brain active, our creative side, the light side keeps us active. So here's what I know to be true. We need 6 hours of uninterrupted sleep to heal. That's when the bodies and the cells rejuvenate. You talk to most Americans, they're just not getting it. It's broken sleep at best, 4 to 5 hours, waking up every 2 or 3 hours. And that's because the brain is active. So bringing that down, calming that down at night. And this is where sometimes we do use things like melatonin. If your body isn't producing enough, and this might be biohack. I have a patient right now, I'm writing a book. After my kids go down, those 2 hours is the only time I can sit at my computer. okay, well then we need to give you melatonin because you're not going to make it. And so you're not going to sleep, right? Those are the kind of some of the hacks. So sleep, food, and sunlight. That I think is probably one of the biggest issues is, you know, here in Texas, sometimes it's too dang hot to go out in the sun. We can only walk our dogs in the morning and you know, when the sun, before the sun's up and after it goes down sometimes, right? But 15 minutes in the sun every day does so much. Vitamin D should almost be a hormone. It's a precursor for many of our hormones. It affects immunity. It affects mood. It affects serotonin levels. It makes us happy. It makes us less ill, right? We're stronger with more vitamin D. In fact, a lot of the studies that came out during COVID, Western medicine, this is a perfect example of functional medicine versus Western. Western medicine considers 30 to 100 normal for vitamin D. Well, I'll tell you, people around hovering around 30, 35, the levels, they have a lot of depression and low immunity. The studies that came out through COVID, the people that recovered quickest had less symptoms. The sweet spot they found was about 60 to 80 levels. So that's a huge difference of, oh, I'm your doctor says, oh, your blood tests look normal, you're in range, barely, and you may have all the symptoms. Let's get you into the center, the functional range, or the high normal of where you can be. So a lot of people just, especially again through COVID, right, even more so working from home, not going out, not even going out for lunch kind of thing sometimes, to the point of they have to supplement. They're just not going to go outside. They're just not going to go outside. They sit at their computer inside all day, and that alone is killing us. Not having enough vitamin D, it affects mood, energy, all of it, hormones. So yeah, it's a huge one. If I were to do number four, I'd say water. Half your body weight in water, in ounces of water. So sorry, I got excited about that one. So if you weigh 150 pounds, 75 ounces of water a day minimum, and people think water hydrates us, it actually cleanses us. Minerals hydrate us, and water will carry those minerals into the cell. So water really is more for detoxing the toxins and feeding the cells minerals. Yeah, okay. Water. Sunlight, right. Water, food, and sleep. It sounds so simple when I say it.
Yeah, it does. It sounds very simple. I on the sunlight piece, so I live in Florida, so also it gets very hot, but I'm so fascinated you said that because I remembered hearing that at some point in time and just one of those things. And I notice if I don't get outside, like it'll be 3 days that I'm just not outside for longer than just walking to the mailbox type thing. And I'll be like, oh my God, I have got to get outside and get some sun. So I literally set an alarm because in January when I was working 18-hour days practically, and I wouldn't get up from my computer very often, I literally set an alarm on my clock at like 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Because in Florida in January, we can go out and walk in the middle of the day, not in the summertime. Yeah. But it's just like, and my went off and be like, just get outside, move your body for 15 minutes. And half the time I wouldn't, because I was busy doing other things, but at least I would go sit outside and eat my lunch. It was kind of like, at least go sit in some sunlight. So if I do that though, can you over vitamin D yourself? And is there too much vitamin D that's not good? And then, or what should someone be taking if they don't have an opportunity to get outside?
Yeah, you're not going to overdose from vitamin D naturally. You're not going to get too much from the sun. And food wise, it's hard to get vitamin D in food. Animal organs is the best source. So like liver, nobody's really eating a whole plethora of that. So it's really hard to get too much vitamin D naturally. Synthetically, or taking a supplement for vitamin D, you absolutely can get too much. Then what happens is the liver is working really hard. Vitamin D is fat soluble, meaning it's broken down in the liver, not the GI tract. So then the liver has to overwork to break down this nutrient when there's too much of it. And then now you're causing more problems for your liver. So a big thing I like to tell people is test, don't guess. Get your vitamin D run. That usually is included. Sometimes you have to ask for it in your annual blood work. That is one that usually is. B vitamins, no. Deeper thyroid level, no. Those are the levels they're going to fight you and reject from the insurance company often. But vitamin D usually is, because there's a lot of also studies of high levels of vitamin D and low cancer. So cancer prevention with vitamin D. So that's become a big panel. However, if somebody's at a good normal rate, any nutrients and supplements over the counter are typically the daily allowance of an already healthy level. So if somebody buys vitamin D over the counter, it's usually 2000 IUs. That's good for maintenance if you're already at a good level. If somebody's low, if they're close to 30, I will put them on 10,000 or 15,000 for a short time because they have the room to go up. I would say 5,000 I use a vitamin D is a really good maintenance dose if you just don't know and want to start there. The other thing is, and this is where we get really deep into people's biochemistry, is we'll run genetics a lot for people. And I'd say 60% of the population has a genetic defect where they don't absorb vitamin D without K. So I tell people, if you don't know if you have that genetic defect, you haven't been to somebody who runs your genetics, get the vitamin D with the vitamin K because it'll absorb better. Also, I could go on and on about vitamin D. Oftentimes it's in soybean oil. It's gotta be delivered in an oil for your body to absorb it. So if you're buying a capsule or a tablet, you're not absorbing much. I tell people to look for olive oil. It's an easier oil to break down than soy for us. Soy is really hard and it can be inflammatory. So olive oil with vitamin K, 5,000 IUs is a really good starting point. If you don't know if you're deficient, you think you could be. 10,000 is if you are deficient and we're trying to bump you up. Anything below 5 really isn't going to move the needle. It'll just keep you at a good level.
Okay. So that's something that anybody can do and not risk being overdoing it. 5,000.
Well, you could. If you did 20,000 for 60 days, it could go too much with the liver. So it is one that I recommend getting tested if you can. Yeah.
Okay. So in the meantime, to get outside is the first.
Yes.
The first and best way is if you can get 15 minutes is not a lot. Go take a break outside. Go take a break on Instagram.
Exactly. Go scroll outside. And I tell people, strip down if you can, right? Like, look what I'm wearing. Long sleeves. My makeup has sunscreen on it because they all do now. And, you know, I'm wearing a dress, but a lot of people are wearing pants. So yeah, if you go outside long sleeves and pants and you're only able to get a little bit of vitamin D here and you're a woman wearing makeup, you're wasting your time. Strip down to a sports bra and shorts, ladies, or men go topless outside, you know, the best you can. I mean, if you can go naked in your backyard, even better, right? or if you're it's allowed or something, right? Like, we actually have to show some skin to absorb it. Yeah.
Hey, good to know. So I know you have some resources on your website. What would be your, we'll send people to your website. All of your socials will be on the show notes. Anybody is looking for, we'll put all of Dr. Tinge's information on the show notes and she'll give them here as well. But you had some resources about some books and things that you love. Is there something that, again, if I'm going to be reading now, because I have to turn off my screen 2 hours before bed, which is whatever. I'm not sure I'm buying into that one. I'll do it. I got to try it because I am having trouble.
Start with 45 minutes, no screens before the time you want to fall asleep and just see what your brain does. People usually dream deeper and more and they wake up more rested pretty within the matter of 2 or 3 days.
So you said TV is okay, but
it's
so
better than a screen close. It's still going to put the light into the right side of the brain and it's still going to be stimulatory, but it's less than it being right close.
If you could read a book for that time, that would be best. Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. So what am I going to be reading now, Dr. Tanisha? What should I be reading about how to have good gut health? And
well, I would read my book.
That's a good one to start with. So
especially if you want to fall asleep. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh yeah. No. Do you have a great book that you would love for us to read? Your book?
Yeah, sure. My book is called What to Do When Your Doctor Gives Up on You, which is a good one. There's another one that I really like that's a little controversial. It's called Alkalize or Die. It talks about alkalizing your body versus being very acidic. And it talks about how cancer, fungus, bacteria, parasites don't thrive well in an alkaline environment. So we want to make our bodies more alkaline. And that's done through, alkaline water has become a trendy thing, but it does help. That's done through food, through highly dense mineral, green leafy vegetables. Food makes us very, very alkaline. That's another good one. Again, it's a little severe. And I quote that a lot in my practice of, he says alkalize or die. That's a good one. Gosh, there's so many out there around the thyroid that I think are really, really good in gut health. I can't think of anybody off the top of my head of one book that I would recommend, but there's a lot.
Like I said, I know you have some on your website too, and people can go to your website and look at some of the resources there as well. And or Dr. Tanisha's book, What to Do When Your Doctor Gives Up on You.
Yeah.
So I think that's great. Yeah. I just wanted to kind of give folks some ideas and some things to do so that they can start to look into changing things for themselves. And do the yogurts with the probiotics, do all those things really work, or is that bullshit?
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. There's prebiotics and probiotics. Prebiotics feed the probiotics. Prebiotics are fruits and vegetables, raw fruits and vegetables. Probiotics actually implant into the gut lining and build immunity. And they're a defense against bugs and getting us sick. Absolutely. And then also with a good amount of probiotics, you can make your brain chemicals better. So in the gut lining, this is the kind of a cute, fun thing. If you were to turn your gut lining inside out, you have all this good flora, they call it, the gut microbiome flora. And these are all good probiotics and enzymes that break down food and keep you strong and they recognize this is a bad bug. This is a good, this is red dye 40. We can't do anything with that. Get rid of it. This is, you know, B12. We can make all lots of energy and ATP out of this. That's all recognized by these good bacteria, good flora. When we talk about something called leaky gut, medications, stress, you hear about stressed out people getting ulcers, poor food diet that you can't, food dyes, chemicals, pesticides, refined sugar, it starts to thin that and it kills them. Now you have something called leaky gut where things can seep through that shouldn't. These bugs can seep through, these chemicals can seep through, and they come through the gut lining when they should be getting out in your stool. And then they settle in your joints, causing pain and inflammation, in your brain, causing dysfunction there. They can really attack any organ that they get through the bloodstream to. And ultimately, this is leaky gut. Western medicine is starting to recognize leaky gut. They mostly don't recognize it till it's ulcerative, till you've burned a hole in your gut lining from, again, stress can do it, high cortisol can do it, but poor diet, food, medications. And now you've got an ulcer, now you can't eat anything and it's burning and you have reflux and you're miserable and you're certainly not making brain chemicals. So now you're depressed and you certainly don't have an immune system because, you know, you have all these holes in your gut lining and now you're sick all the time. Those are, and you go to your doctor and they're like, well, eat better. Okay, well, what does that mean? You know, here's an antidepressant, eat better. And they're not looking at fixing and rebuilding that gut lining to make all of those chemicals and immune system back to a normal state. And that whole kind of thought right there is, I think, the biggest thing in starting to heal somebody.
Because it is healable. You can repair that gut line. It will all grow back. It will all repair itself.
Absolutely. Yep. We use a lot of things called amino acids that will heal and seal the gut. Aloe vera is a big one. One of the things when I find out someone has ulcerations and leaky gut and they're not making their brain chemicals and they're having problems with food, I have them drink 3 ounces of aloe vera on an empty stomach twice a day. Just like putting aloe vera on a cut, it'll seal and heal that up. That's one. Marshmallow root extract is an herb. That's another one. We have a concoction that of a powder that heals the gut. And then what I love about the stool test is not only is it telling us if there's bad guys like E. coli or H. pylori, these bad guys or fungus or parasites, it also gives us a level of good bacteria. So with that stool test, I can go, oh, this person is deficient in this level of Acidophilus probiotic. That's the one I'm going to reimplant versus, again, whack-a-mole. Just go, you know, you go down the aisle at a grocery store and there's 1800 different probiotics. Well, which strain do you need?
Right.
You know, without testing, we don't know. And that's why everything is so data-driven of what do we need to heal your gut? And you can take probiotics maintenance wise. I do all year round and I just alternate them. So I don't have too much of one. That's a good kind of biohack of every 2 to 3 bottles, change the probiotics so that you're reimplanting all of them if you just don't know or can't get the testing or whatever. But the quickest, fastest way is to get precise. What am I missing? What do I need to kill? And what do I need to add? Again, I kind of said that at the beginning. What am I lacking that I need more of? What do I have too much that I need to take away? And the body can balance itself given that environment.
Before we wrap up, do you have to test for that kind of stuff continually also, or is it more of like a maintenance thing? Like you kind of know your body is good at making this, not good at making that. You get it better with the food. And then we retest maybe in a year, or we just kind of going with that tends to be your genetic makeup.
A little bit of both. I listen to the person's body. So if we put them through a gut healing program after we've read their stool and they're symptom free, I don't waste their time and money on it. So I only run tests if I feel like it's going to change my course of action. If it's going to change my next right step. So if we go through the gut healing and the person's doing great, I typically don't run it again unless they want to see it. Now, if they go through something really stressful, they had to take antibiotics, which we know can kill. Prolonged antibiotics will kill the good probiotics also. They went through something major stressful. They've been traveling and binge eating and they're coming back with all these GI issues. Yeah, they may have caught a bug or they may have some deficiencies. Let's take a look again. If they can't get it balanced themselves, sometimes they're like, oh, well, let me do what I did before and it works. So only if I feel like we're missing something will I take a look. I call it lifting the hood and taking a peek. Let's see.
Exactly. Okay. Well, this has been amazing. We could sit here and talk probably for the whole entire rest of the day, but we're going to break these up into episodes and not do that in one entire episode because I don't have my test results yet either. But I am so thankful again for you to be here. Why don't you tell everybody what's the best way if people have questions for you, they want to reach out to you, what's the best way for them to find you?
Yeah, our website is Austin Holistic Doctor. So AustinHolisticDR.com. Our handle on Instagram is Infinity Wellness ATX, ATX for Austin. Yeah, either of those, I'll get those messages. Yep, if you contact me.
Mm-hmm, okay, great. So definitely make sure to, you said that was Instagram. Make sure to follow. Dr. Tanisha on Instagram and reach out to her if you have any questions. But again, and also if you have questions, you know, I think that would be great. And after a couple of these, I'm hoping that we'll get some questions from folks that we can then just do a big Q&A episode. Maybe we can even do that live and let people kind of ask us questions. But I think that would be really fun once we kind of go through this process and we find out a little bit more and do a little bit more research about what's going on with me and what's going on with other folks. And so I think that'd be great. But if you guys have questions, please don't hesitate to reach out to me either. You can find me at Myrina, M-Y-R-I-N-A at accidentalswingers.com. And then, you know, our socials are at Accidental Swingers on Instagram. I'll give Tristan a shout out, even though he's not here. He loves his Instagram fan. So you can find him at Marina's Tristan on Instagram. So you can find us there. But I want to thank everybody so much for joining us today. I hope that talking about this is something that you find beneficial as we go through this process. I hope that you can find some answers for yourself, or at least find some direction and find some resources, because this is crazy that we kind of have to go through this. And I think as we all get older, men and women, because men, you have your problems too. We're going to start talking about some of those things as well. And Tristan will talk about a lot of those because he's experiencing his issues. And so Tristan and I feel very lucky to be able to have a platform to be able to bring some of this information to folks in a way that maybe not everybody gets it. And Tanisha, I'm so grateful for you and for you reaching out to me and letting me know that this is not only what you do, it's what you're passionate about, and then agreeing to come on to the podcast and talk about this. And to know that I have a doctor who is a lifestyler in my corner, so there, the no judgment zone, like I don't even have to think about it, that's a huge weight off of my shoulder. So thank you very much. And this is just, I'm looking forward to getting myself right. And I know I'm setting up for a journey. I know I've got a lot to do. I've got a lot of very bad habits and I need to change them if I want to be that sexually active lady in her late 70s. And so that's what I keep visualizing for myself. And I'm like, yes, but I don't want to have to not do this anymore. I want to do all the horrible things that I love doing. That some, I was just telling my mother the other day who is trying to rehab. She doesn't want to rehab. I'm like, well, so she's like, I don't like doing that. And I'm like, well, sometimes you have to do the stuff you don't want to do to be able to get to the stuff that you do want to do. So absolutely. I know
where all
I
am. Choices. Yeah. All choices. And absolutely. Thank you for your vulnerability and bringing up the subject. It is not easy at all, right? Because we want to be strong and stoic women. I am the same way. And allowing me to spread this message and maybe help some other people and help me live my passion and purpose. So thank you.
I love it. No, I'm thrilled that your passion and purpose align with my needs. Thank you so much for being here. And so we will talk to you next time with our results.
Dun, dun, dun. I can't
wait. All right. Sounds good. Thank you. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Loved this episode of The Accidental Swingers? Pop on over to your favorite podcast platform and subscribe to our show. And while you're there, you can leave us a review. You can also visit our website, accidentalswingers.com, to get show notes, read our blog, or find out about our next adventure. Join us next time and listen along as we bumble our way through this adventure that we call the lifestyle.